ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Monday, the 8th of December. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, one firefighter dead and dozens of homes lost in the weekend's bushfires. Authorities are concerned for the summer ahead. And Jeremy Clarkson, actor Shane Jacobson and comedian Andy Lee all own them. Now, a regional town has banded together to buy the local pub.
Which is about economic democracy, really. You know, that lots of people in this community really recognised what's happening to the town in terms of kind of gentrification and prices going up and, you know, saw the opportunity for a community to have some say in what happens here.
One of Australia's most notorious pedophiles could have been stopped earlier. That's the major finding in a review released this morning. Ashley Paul Griffith committed hundreds of acts of abuse at childcare centres in Brisbane over two decades and was sentenced to life in prison with a 27-year non-parole period last year. In announcing today's findings, the Queensland Premier, David Crisafulli, promised swift action on the review's recommendations. Reporter Molly Slattery has been covering the story.
This was the offending of Ashley Paul Griffith, one of Australia's worst child sex offenders. He pled guilty to 300 charges against 69 children across daycare centres in Brisbane and overseas in Italy as well. Initially, he was charged with more than 1,000 offences by the Australian Federal Police. So that offending got Ashley Paul Griffith locked away last year for 27 years. So he's got a life sentence and 27 years before he can apply for parole. So certainly a case that really rocked the country, that sort of scale of offending against children so young in a place that they should have felt safe, their parents should have had faith that they could be safe in those places. So it was the offending of Ashley Paul Griffith that triggered this enormous review.
And what are some of the findings of the review?
The key finding here is that Ashley Paul Griffith's offending could and should have been detected and disrupted. The findings have identified that there were 18 separate opportunities to detect and disrupt this offending and five instances where it very clearly could have been stopped had the right steps been taken. So incredibly damning findings from this review. It's also come out that parents and children and staff at these daycare centres repeatedly raised legitimate concerns, but there was no obvious resolution followed, is how the report has summarised the response to those concerns that were raised. It's also found that police thresholds for action were quite high. So it meant that, you know, allegations that were made against this man didn't quite meet the threshold for police investigation. And as a result, they just sort of kept getting pushed under the rug and passed on. So there was, like we've said, incredibly damning findings by this review. And some really big steps forward needed to be taken by the Queensland government here.
So what about the Queensland government? How are they responding?
This report is 500 pages. It's an enormous, enormous report here led by Luke Twyford. And he even said today in this press conference where we heard from the Attorney General, the Premier and the report lead, Mr. Twyford, he said the government needs to take time to look at this review. He said he didn't want them to just stand up there and agree to all of the terms. This report has made 28 recommendations, many of which he said will have transformative changes. It will have enormous, wide-ranging sort of consequences for the sector, for parents and for children. So the report lead is saying the Queensland government needs to take the time to look really closely at this. We heard from the Queensland Premier today in terms of the steps forward that his government will be taking. And here's what he said.
It'll send a shiver up the spine of every Queensland parent. But it is a call for action, and action is what we will be delivering. And I assure you that the attorney who commissioned this will be taking the recommendations very seriously and will be acting swiftly on them.
The Queensland Premier, David Crisafulli, before him, our reporter, Molly Slattery. And if you've experienced childhood trauma or abuse, you can call the Blue Knot Helpline on 1300 657 380. A firefighter from the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service has died working on a blaze at Bulladela on the state's mid-north coast. The fire, which has destroyed four homes, is yet to be contained. It's one of dozens still burning across the state today, and while conditions have been more favourable for fire crews, it's only the beginning of the fire season, with stark concerns for what's to come next. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
At least 20 homes were destroyed by fire in New South Wales over the weekend. Overnight, the scale of the tragedy deepened with the death of a 59-year-old firefighter from the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service. Penny Sharp is the New South Wales Environment Minister.
The firefighter was a field officer with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, and he started working for National Parks in 1996. He was an experienced firefighter and divisional commander. He has worked out of the Lake Munmura depot for the past 25 years. He died while working near Narong at the Bulladela fire last night. It's believed he suffered a cardiac arrest after being struck by a falling tree.
His colleagues performed CPR, but he died at the scene. Trent Curtin is the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner.
This is such a tragic day for firefighters right across New South Wales and right across the firefighting fraternity. Our hearts go out to his family and his colleagues, but also to the communities affected, his community and the community up there in Bulladela. We will suffer this loss for some time.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said in a social media post his heart goes out to the loved ones and colleagues of the firefighter and that the bravery of fire crews is honoured every day. At least four homes have been destroyed at Bulladela and a further 16 at Coolewong on the New South Wales Central Coast. Central Coast resident Nicole Vaughan explains the double tragedy affecting her 19-year-old daughter, whose late father's home was lost.
Well, I heard through my ex-brother-in-law and then through social media, I was watching it burn like before my eyes. I had absolutely no words. I was absolutely dumbfounded, and I've been watching news ever since, and the house is heavily featured in the footage. Everything's been lost because the only thing that's standing is the brick foundations.
She says her daughter, who lost her dad just 6 weeks ago, was in the process of clearing out his property.
She's not good at all. We've just gotten, through her father's death.
Natural disasters have been declared in six areas across New South Wales, with disaster assistance payments activated by the state and federal governments. The RFS Commissioner says a number of large fires are still burning.
We've got hundreds of firefighters deployed at the moment. We've got aircraft deployed. We've got heavy plant and bulldozers deployed to try and continue to get on top of those fires. We've seen some very, very challenging conditions over previous days, and so our firefighters are continuing to work extremely hard to bring those fires under control.
We're only a week into summer, and while the conditions affecting the fires currently burning have eased somewhat, the concern is for what's still to come.
I've got a serious concern about complacency in the community. We know that after a few years of elevated rain and wet conditions, that people aren't thinking about bushfires sufficiently at the moment. We expected to see a lot more rain through the spring period, and our early warnings were suggesting that this might be a lower than average bushfire year. But as the Bureau of Meteorology has changed those predictions and given us information to suggest that this would be an average or above average bushfire season.
He says it's critical for residents to understand properties don't need to border the bush to be impacted by fires, with embers able to travel up to 20 kilometres. And it's not just New South Wales that's at risk. In Tasmania, 19 homes have been destroyed in the East Coast community of Dolphin Sands. Christy McBain is the Minister for Emergency Management.
We've started this high-risk weather season with Tropical Cyclone Fina. We've had hailstorms in Queensland. We've had, obviously, bushfires now in Tasmania and New South Wales, and there are advice-level fires in Queensland right now, as well as bushfires in WA. So I think it's, again, a timely reminder for Australians to make sure that they have an emergency plan.
The Minister for Emergency Management, Christy McBain, ending that report by Tanya Dendrinos. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce has joined One Nation after weeks of speculation. The announcement comes after Mr. Joyce had a breakdown in his relationship with Nationals leader David Littleproud. In a statement, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson says Joyce will continue representing his electorate of New England until the next election, then vie for a New South Wales Senate seat with his new party. Tune into the ABC as we bring you more details of that breaking story. Well, already under fire after a recent overseas trip, it's now emerged the Sport and Communications Minister, Annika Wells, spent thousands of taxpayer dollars so that her husband could accompany her to the cricket. She also brought the kids along for a ski holiday while engaged in official business at Thredbo. While the Prime Minister insists the spending was within parliamentary guidelines, it's prompting calls for the rules to be overhauled at a time when working Australians are under pressure to account for every single cent they spend. Nick Grimm reports.
Wow, okay, I mean, great destination, but again?
When it comes to the spending of taxpayer dollars, most Australians take a dim view of politicians, putting certain travel costs on the public dime.
Politicians all around the world who feather their own nest deserve all that comes their way.
Definitely not. There are many families out there who are really, really struggling just to put bread and butter on their tables.
There's a growing list of spending putting pressure on Sports Minister Annika Wells. On top of close to $100,000 on overseas travel to New York, there's now a $3,000 bill for a ski weekend for her family, $3,700 on an Adelaide work trip that coincided with a friend's birthday party, $4,000 so her husband could join her at three cricket matches, and a further $1,800 for the Melbourne Grand Prix. Voters who spoke to The World Today seemingly little inclined to believe it's worthy compensation for a tough, family-unfriendly job.
No, they can pay for their family and all their associates themselves.
I would think that she would be well and truly able to cover the cost for her husband to go to that event on her own without having to make it an outlay for taxpayers.
This is a total train wreck at high speed off a high cliff.
Veteran parliamentarian Barnaby Joyce is no stranger to the pressures of political life on family and the need to be able to blow off steam occasionally. But the former Nationals MP reckons Annika Wells' spending on meals, holidays and sporting events just won't pass muster with the public. He's speaking here on the Seven Network.
So $1,700 for a night on the tiles does not pass the pub test.
Today, a number of the sports minister's colleagues have also hit the airwaves to defend her spending. Here's Social Services Minister Tanya Plibersek on Seven.
If that was your money and your company, do you reckon you'd still stump up the cash?
Look, I think taxpayers have a right to demand transparency.
And Employment Minister Amanda Rishworth on Nine.
Do you concede, though, this doesn't wash well with voters who are having to watch every penny in their own family budgets?
Well, of course people are doing it tough, and of course we as members of parliament have to be very, very careful. But as the minister has said, she has been very clear about answering the questions yesterday that she did follow the rules and it was for work purposes.
Meanwhile, the federal opposition is also weighing in. Angus Taylor is the Shadow Defence Minister.
I mean, flying your family down to Thredbo for a ski holiday really doesn't pass the pub test.
And that's why many outside of politics believe it's time for guidelines to be overhauled. Anthony Whealy is a former New South Wales Supreme Court of Appeal judge and chair of the Centre for Public Integrity.
I think it's indefensible, really, and it's simply no use defending the position by saying they comply with the guidelines. If at the end of the day they do, and I'm not sure they do at all, then I think we need to change the guidelines. You know, it's very easy to drum up a bit of political business while you're going down to watch a cricket match or going skiing, but the truth of the matter is those family reunion entitlements are there to help out politicians who are separated from their family while they're doing their job in Canberra. They're not there to enable you to get a free night out at the cricket, courtesy of the corporate box you've been invited to, and to bring your husband along as well. I mean, that's really got nothing to do with family reunion entitlements. It's snouts in the trough, and it really stinks.
Essentially, you're saying that politicians are abusing the spirit of these rules.
Yes, exactly. They're abusing them wholeheartedly.
Anthony Whealy from the Centre for Public Integrity, ending that report by Nick Grimm and Elizabeth Cramsey. The Human Rights Law Centre is preparing a challenge to expanded police powers in Victoria that will allow officers to stop and search people in Melbourne's CBD without a warrant. Last month, Victoria Police announced parts of central Melbourne would come under a designated area declaration for the next 6 months in response to community concerns over knife crime. But critics say the declaration will disproportionately affect vulnerable communities. Here's Kathleen O'Connor.
It was first trialled as a way to combat violent protests.
Hey, hey,
and now, controversial police search powers are being expanded to tackle what Victoria Police say is a crime crisis. Bob Hill is the Deputy Commissioner of Victoria Police.
We need to get on top of the knife crime.
From now until May next year, anyone in central Melbourne, including the CBD, Docklands and Southbank, could be subject to a police search without a warrant. The declaration means that police are able to conduct pat-downs or wand searches. Officers can also search vehicles and ask people to remove face coverings.
We do not discriminate. It's a random selection of people and we do not have any tolerance for racial profiling in our organisation. Young people, yes, they'll be subject to an initial wand search that should take no more than 10 seconds. They'll be subject to a pat-down search, but that's where it ceases. No child will be subject to any more comprehensive searching unless they have a guardian or a parent present.
Lawyers from the Human Rights Law Centre say the move is ripe for abuse. Sarah Schwartz is the centre's legal director.
We will be arguing that the legal threshold for the designation of this area has not been met, that this decision breaches Victoria's Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities, and the police powers to order the removal of face coverings is unconstitutional.
The High Court challenge was filed by First Nations woman Tarnine Onus Brown and performance artist Benny Zabel. Ms. Brown says everyone deserves to move through this city with dignity and fairness.
Giving the police even broader powers will supercharge harassment and targeting.
Crime has become a major political issue in Victoria, with police describing the state in the grips of a crisis, particularly knife crime. In response to several violent incidents at Melbourne shopping centres in recent months, including brawls and machete attacks, Victoria Police from today will also boost patrols at 4 shopping centres over summer. Wayne Gatt is the secretary of the Victorian Police Association.
There's a benefit for all of us when we get a Christmas shopping done, a greater degree of confidence that some of the scenes that we've witnessed in recent months at shopping centres in particular might actually be deterred by a policing presence there.
Police patrolling the shopping centres will also be granted expanded search powers. Theo Ficari from the Australian Association of Convenience Stores says the move is long overdue.
It's probably the worst it's ever been across Victoria and right around the country. It's bad enough that retailers of all sizes, big and small, continue to invest in a whole range of measures, from significantly increasing staff training, body-worn cameras, creating safe rooms in some retail environment.
Anthony Carbines is Victoria's police minister.
If you're not carrying any prohibited weapons, you've got nothing to worry about. But if you are carrying edged weapons or other items, you will be stopped and searched without a warrant.
The Human Rights Law Centre is seeking to have the matter heard in the federal court before the end of January.
Kathleen O'Connor and Bridget Fitzgerald with that report. Australian Formula One driver Oscar Piastri has finished third in this year's series, finishing behind teammate Lando Norris, who claimed his first world title. The 24-year-old led the championship for much of the year, but a few costly mistakes late in the season saw him drop in the rankings. Despite the disappointment, the Formula One world has Piastri pegged as a future world champion. Here's Angus Randall.
But this will be a victory lap for Lando Norris. Oscar Piastri will come over the line next.
Before the lights went green at the final race in Abu Dhabi, there were three drivers who could cross the line as Formula One world champions. But as they waved the checkered flag, McLaren's Lando Norris emerged the overall winner, just ahead of Australian teammate Oscar Piastri and breaking a four-year winning streak from Red Bull driver Max Verstappen.
And after 24 rounds, Lando Norris is the Formula One world champion!
It's the Brit's seventh season and first time as world champion.
Oscar gave it an incredible run and I want to, I don't know where he is, I want to celebrate with him. I know it's a tricky one, but he's been just as much part of it as anyone else.
Oscar Piastri needed to win in Abu Dhabi, and rivals Lando Norris and Max Verstappen had to have bad drives to make up the difference. He finished second to Verstappen in the final race of the year, with Norris claiming third, enough for Norris to hold on to his overall lead. Piastri led the championship for months, a huge achievement in just his third season.
You know, when things have been good this year, I've felt unstoppable. There's been plenty of times where that's not been the case.
As recently as August, Piastri led the title race by 34 points, but he was unable to claim victory in the final nine races of the year, missing the podium entirely in six of them. Matt Gallagher is a Formula One commentator and host of the P1 podcast.
As much as he didn't win the world championship this year, he has proved that he can and most likely will win a world championship in the future.
Australian F1 fans were in an uproar in September in Monza, Italy, when McLaren ordered Piastri to let Norris overtake him late in the race after the British driver had a bad pit stop. Both McLaren drivers ended the season with seven race wins. Matt Gallagher says it's a delicate situation. These two ultra-competitive young men are both teammates sharing pit crews and rivals on the track.
The problem is you can't be fair, especially in Formula One. There's so many different scenarios and that's what's happened. And I guess a lot of Australians have been asking, well, has it been fair for Oscar this year?
ESPN F1 journo Nate Saunders watched the Abu Dhabi race live. He says despite grumbles from some parochial Aussies, McLaren didn't put their thumb on the scale as much as it may seem.
The fact that McLaren allowed them to race and didn't just immediately slap the number one kind of priority on Lando's car has made it a very fascinating season.
The next Formula One season starts in Melbourne in March.
Angus Randall there. Well, Jeremy Clarkson owns one, so too actor Shane Jacobson, also comedian Andy Lee. Buying the local pub is usually the stuff of beery daydreams, but one community in Victoria has decided to make it a reality. In fact, hundreds of locals in Castlemaine have banded together to buy the 150-year-old pub building, all without going to the bank. Here's Emilia Turzon.
In the Victorian country town of Castlemaine, more than 100 locals are watching an interpretive dance at their local town hall. Angus Grattan is running this meeting and he explains what they're watching.
The dance explores how change can be scary, but it's worth it. There might be magic on the other side. Well, we did the scary thing.
Everybody here just helped pull together almost $2 million to buy the town's historic 150-year-old hotel building. The Castlemaine locals bought this property using a cooperative model. As partial owners, they share the profits and they get to decide how the establishment is run. Warwick Smith is one of the co-op's founders.
We wanted to take this property out of the market permanently and have it managed by the community. For the community.
Why not just go to a bank and get out a loan and buy this with just a few of your mates?
Well, because of that bigger vision, which is about economic democracy, really. You know, that lots of people in this community really recognised what's happening to the town in terms of kind of gentrification and prices going up and, you know, saw the opportunity for a community to have some say in what happens here.
Despite its history as a Gold Rush era pub, the building currently houses a dozen tenants, including not-for-profits and small businesses. Emma Brinkman runs her Chinese herbs and acupuncture business out of the building, and she is relieved that she's now guaranteed tenancy for years to come.
I'm a member of the co-op. I mean, a tiny little member, but it just feels really good to be a part of it. I guess number one thing is that I feel really grounded here. I feel really secure and like my business can continue in this space. And so it's a huge relief.
There's almost 2,000 co-ops nationally. The chief executive of the Business Council of Cooperatives and Mutuals, Melina Morrison, says that they're being increasingly used by regional communities.
So we're seeing communities come together to own renewable energy assets, pubs, hotels, retail stores, petrol stations. They can really fulfil a need that a community has.
Castlemaine's co-op was lucky. The building's former owners decided to keep the building off the private sales market while the community raised the funds this year. Former owner Heather Barrett says this was an easy decision.
They floated the idea with my husband and I a couple of years ago, but they had to form a co-op and they had to... So it was just the genesis of the idea. We just said, yeah, this is, suits our values, and so we're really excited about it.
Now that it's in the community's hands, the co-op is going to have to begin the hard work of paying back their members the cash that they invested. And they already have plans to buy more assets in Castlemaine in coming years.
Amelia Turzon there. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Andy Park.
Hi, I'm Sydney Peed from ABC News Daily podcast. Parents and teens are getting ready for life cut off from social media when Australia's world-first ban for under-16s officially starts on Thursday. The government says it will take time to remove all under-16s from the platforms, and it's becoming clear older users could get caught in the net. Today, tech reporter Jennifer Dudley Nicholson on what to know ahead of the ban. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.